It's slated to be a 3-book series. The second book's completed. I'm working on the third one. And it follows a television reporter. His name is Pete LeMaster. And for Pete, the story starts, The Bystander is the first book. The story starts, Pete is a television reporter. It's a Friday afternoon. He's out filming like a lifestyle piece. There's a football game the next day, and there's the crowds starting to build for, you know, the party the night before. He goes to interview the fans and go talk about the football rivalry and stuff like that. And then a guy kind of enters this retail complex with a rifle, and the reporter turns his camera around, hits record, and dives for cover.
All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Space Tomatoes podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Havoc. We have our other host.
Alex, hello. Welcome back. And all that stuff.
Today we're joined by a special guest, John David. John David is a longtime public relations and crisis communications consultant, author of a nonfiction business book, and a corporate ghostwriter. His debut novel, The Bystander, The LeMaster Files, Book 1, won the 2025 Page Turner Award for Mystery Novels. Welcome to the Space Tomatoes Show, John.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. Appreciate your time today.
Absolutely. So, I'm very interested in the creative process, right? I at one point did try and start writing a book. I got about 6 pages in, which flowed amazingly. And then here we are 30 years later.
Write a word a day, whether you need to or not. It's an interesting thing. You know, for me, honestly, this is my first novel. I had never written a novel before. I'd probably written a couple of short stories somewhere in my life, but I'd never written fiction. But I read a ton of fiction, read a ton of mystery novels and thriller novels and all that. And quite honestly, I mean, there's sort of an arc to it. I wrote a business book that came out in 2016, and I learned a lot about the publishing world there and during that process. And it was really based, my business book was born from my blog. I was writing a blog pretty regularly and covering a lot of issues, you know, public relations, communications, marketing, stuff like that. And I started to delve into online reputation issues. And that's what my book ended up being about. My business book was called How to Protect or Destroy Your Reputation Online. It came out in 2016. And I learned a lot about publishing, you know, in general. And then now 3 years ago, you know, my life changed a little bit. My kids were grown and gone to college, you know, and I had a little bit more time on my hands, and I kind of rediscovered novels and thriller novels and mystery novels because I just had more time, you know. When I got married, you know, something's got to give, and so, you know, there's things you can't continue doing that you used to do. And one of them, I used to read a lot of books, and I stopped reading fiction, and so I kind of rediscovered fiction. And then I had an idea about 3 years ago. I had an idea, kind of an incident happened, a news story happened, and it really caught my attention. And I thought, you know what, this could be the backdrop for a novel. And I just decided to write it. And so, as I'm sort of prone to do, I didn't tell anybody. I just started doing it kind of a little bit in my off time, you know, when I had spare moments. I did it, and I was able to, you know, and I within, you know, 5 months, I'd cobbled together a manuscript, and off you go.
Wow. That's impressive.
It is. So when you So you used basically your experience from blogging to write your first book. What would you say were like the biggest differences between writing that book and writing your newest book?
I mean, the biggest difference is you get to make everything up. That's the biggest thing when you write a novel. you get to make everything up and you get to do whatever you want. So my protagonist in my book is a journalist. And so I have a communications background. I studied journalism in college. I've been a public relations consultant for 30 years. And so I kind of took the approach of, all right, I'm going to try to tell a story from the perspective of a journalist. And I've never been a professional journalist, but I know hundreds, maybe thousands of journalists, professional journalists. And so I have a pretty good understanding of that industry, you know, is probably as good as you can have when you're not in it. I try to write what to me feels realistic. And then the biggest difference is that, if something, you know, I have to kind of catch myself at times because sometimes I'm like, I go, well, this doesn't make sense. What am I going to do? And I realize, wait, I can go back and change the facts. You know, I can go back and change, you know, it's not day, it's night, you know, he's not tall, he's short, you know? And so that's the biggest thing is you can kind of go back and make modifications to your tale, you know, and change it whenever you want. So like that's the big thing. You're telling the whole story and you get the opportunity to, you know, create your kind of your world, however you want it to be.
Do you ever have any trouble keeping things straight in your mind as far as like continuity, since it's, you know, over 5 months that it took you to write it and you know, like messing things up or going back and having to edit
them? Yeah. Well, I part of that is solved for me because I don't do, it's not like a flashback. It's not a dual timeline book or anything like that. This book, The Bystander, actually takes place. The timeline is actually over a period of like a week. It's like starts on a Friday and I think it ends on a Sunday. I can't remember precisely. So continuity, right? I can't remember when my book ends. But the point is that I think I pretty much when I first drafted, I wrote each day. So like I didn't even have a chapter breakdown. The first draft, was, okay, here's what happens on Friday. And then here's what happens on Saturday. And here's what happens on Sunday. So that made those continuity things easier. Where I get mixed up sometimes is that I'm not really great. You create characters and you create names. And sometimes I just create a character and I just give this person a random name. And then I go back and change it later. And sometimes I'm still sort of thinking about the random name I gave them the first time. And so I sometimes forget the character's exact name. I'm like, yeah, cause I, for most of the time I was writing it was this. And then I changed it at the end, you know, cause I thought it made more sense. But for the most part, it's just, you know, you become pretty intimate with the book. My books are not, my book's 300 pages. It's not 1,000 pages, you know, it's not, you know, whatever Tolkien length or, you know, Dan Brown length or anything like that, you know, and I'm also not creating, you know, magical, mystical worlds where I have to remember, you know, where I've created a whole different, you know, whatever races of beings with different types of names and stuff. I'm not doing any of that. And there's no Hogwartian type stuff in my book either. It's all.
So it kind of flows.
I'm sure the people that write that stuff have to have almost a Bible of things to remember.
Oh, sure. I would imagine. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think folks who could do that, I think it's incredible and they're just kind of wired different, you know, than I am. I'm amazed by when the people kind of create their own worlds. It's great.
Mm. So do you come into this kind of with an idea of where you're going to end up? Like this is kind of the shell of the story and I'm going to make a story that comes to this kind of ending or conclusion, or is it more of a, I'm not sure where we're going to conclude, but we're going on an adventure and we'll find the end when we get there.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot to that question. So the thing, when I wrote this book, I had an idea of like what I thought the plot line was going to be, like how it was. I kind of knew how it was going to end, but then I just kind of filled it in between. In the writing world, there's in the parlance, there's people who are plotters and there are people who are pantsers. And I'm a pantser. So I'm more of the, like, I know kind of like, I know how it's going to start. I know how it's going to end. And then I got to find my way to the end. And that process of finding your way to the end, building out, you know, because I write mystery novels, building out those, you know, building out the mystery is a big part of the, is the creative process. And to me, I try to outline more. I think that you're better off if you outline more, that the process might be easier if you outline more, but I'm not a huge outliner. And I've heard stories of, you know, writers who write, you know, huge, massive outlines, and that's not me, you know?
Okay.
So, but that's the, for me, it's like, I kind of have an, I know how it's going to start. I know how it's going to end, and I got to figure out, you know, the middle.
So if somebody is, has their creative juices flowing, they come up with a 300 page manuscript. They're like, this is great. What do you do with it after that point? So like, you don't get ripped off and get your content stolen and all that stuff. And how does it actually become a book that people can buy and read?
So there's a couple of points, I guess, there. So the first thing you have to decide is how, you know, what do you want to do with it once if you're, now if you've just written it and nobody else has seen it, you know, then you need an editor. Everybody needs an editor. There's no denying it. James Patterson needs an editor. You know, J.K. Rowling needs an editor. Stephen King needs an editor. Everybody needs an editor. And so you need to get your manuscript professionally edited by someone who's going to have an arm's length view of it and is going to tell you what's right and what's wrong and what you should fix and what you should keep and all that. So once you have a polished manuscript, then you have to decide what you want to do with it. Do you want to try to get it traditionally published, or do you want to try to get it, you know, self-published, or do you want to do some hybrid version? What do you want to do? So if you're self-publishing, then you can go and, you know, you can put it up on Amazon yourself if you want. You can create your own cover and put it up there, and it'll be live and ready to rip in hours, you know? You know, then there's all kinds of contractors out there, folks who will help you with cover designs and will help you create your formatting. And again, you can put it up there. And then, you know, then your product is on, you know, on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or wherever you put it. To be traditionally published, it's a different beast entirely, because if you want to be published by the big five publishers, the big publishing houses, you generally need an agent. And so you have to go through the marketplace to find an agent who will represent your work. And that's a whole, its own process. There's a way that agents like to receive information. They take, they have their, it's all sort of similar, but they're all, you know, individually they have their own requirements. And if you're fortunate enough to be signed by an agent, then the agent will take your book and, you know, try to sell it to sell to the publishing houses. Or you can go, and what I ended up doing was did not get an agent. I ended up taking my book directly to some small publishers, and that's how I got published. So I have my publisher is a company called Thule Publishing. They're based in California. And, you know, I submitted my manuscript directly to them. They liked it, and they signed me to write a 3-book series.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
So
cool.
What would you say, I mean, how do you make that determination, whether you want to go after an agent, you want to go for a smaller, more independent publisher, or you want to try and go for, you know, self-publishing? And when you do make that decision, what's the best way to market yourself? I mean, if you were interested in doing this.
I mean, honestly, I think that decision is largely made for you. I mean, for me, you know, I wrote my manuscript. It took me about, you know, 5 months to write the first draft. And then I spent some time polishing it and working on it and then I went out to the Asian market and I spent about four or five months pushing really hard, trying to find an agent and didn't get anywhere. And then like life happened. And so I had, you know, I kept kind of pushing along. And then, you know, I had an idea, I don't know, about a year in, to try to go directly to small presses. And then I got some traction. And that's how I ended up publishing my book. So, I mean, I was trying to get an agent to try to get my book in front of like the big five publishing houses, but I was unsuccessful at that. And so to me, the next best thing was a small press. I could have published myself if I wanted to. I think that's a really, really rough road. I really do. I think there's a lot of reasons why, One is because you really, in my opinion, you need to have, like, the people who have a publishing experience, it's really valuable. I mean, they know how to title a book. They know how to, what cover designs work. They know how, you know, what the process is to get it, you know, all the hoops you have to jump through. And they also shoulder some of that. They shoulder the cost for that. You know, they right. know how to get audiobook deals and all that stuff. Now, self-publishing, you're sort of on your own. And self-publishing, although there's a lot of, like, really successful self-publishing stories, most of those stories are rare. Sure. And so you just have, you know, I think that people are, it's less so, but they look at self-publishing differently than they look at traditional publishing. And then when it comes to marketing of book, that's across the board. You know, you have some publishers that push really hard for long periods of time, some that give you a little burst in the beginning. These days, I think a lot of it, you know, particularly if you're with a small press like me, a lot of it lands on the shoulders of the author. Sure. To do the marketing. I mean, I'm lucky in that I know how to do some of this stuff because I've been a publicist before. So I know how to book myself on podcasts. I knew how to do that before I published my book. I knew I've spoken on podcasts about other topics. So I know a little bit about marketing. But a lot of times it lands, the marketing and publicity and everything lands on the author.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It seems like
I'm kind of curious, being in PR. So, are you prepared? What were to happen if, say, your book takes off and sells a million or two copies or whatever, and now you're suddenly famous and thrust in the spotlight? Is that something you think you could handle?
Yeah, my kind of problem, man. I think I could handle it. You know, I think I can handle it. I think I can handle it. I mean, it'd be great I'm hustling to find a readership. You know, I'm trying to, you know, my book's been, I've been fortunate in that I've had a good critical response for my book, that a lot of people like it. I've gotten some really great reviews and some great support from different reviewers. I've won some awards and things like that, but it's hard. There's statistics out there, the number of books that get, like, loaded up onto Amazon every day. And I would just depress me if I actually could quote them. So I don't know those numbers, but they're high. It's a lot. It's a big market, and it's tough. So, you know,
I think that's pretty common across any art style sure. industry, right? I mean, sure. just there are a ton of creators and only so many consumers for that particular area. Right. And of course, you've got the spotlight from the giant folks, you know, like Stephen King and the like. And it's like, OK, but, you know, hey, that would be a good problem to have.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And listen, Stephen King, he's still going strong. Right. He hasn't, like, it's not like, I don't know if you guys are, like, sports fans, but, you know, you watch pro sports, for example, and these guys get older and they retire, you know, and they make room for the next guys to come through, you know. And, like, you know, Stephen King, he's got no reason to retire. He's still writing books, you know. He's still writing. He wrote a whodunit kind of novel this year that was, like, outside his normal. You know, he's normally he's the horror king, and he wrote a mystery whodunit. So they just keep on pumping them out. They're not waiting for, they're not saying, hey, let's let this other guy have a shot. You know, there's none of that going on.
Right. Yeah. No coattails for you.
Right. That's right.
Oh man. So what do you think, what are some of the toughest things about the, and I guess it's kind of a both world we live in now, right? Is not only printed, but also digital rights. What are some of the challenges around that? Maintaining your rights, making sure that you're not being, you know, infringed, et cetera.
It's hard. I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, I'm pretty careful about, you know, I mean, I have digital copies of my book, meaning, like, you know, I'm obviously they're being sold on that digital platforms, and I have digital copies of my book, and, you know, somebody wants to review it, you know, they get a digital copy, and you know what a digital copy is, you know, it's not a copy. It's it, you know, it's the thing. So, you know, there's a level of trust that goes into this, number one. And, But for me right now, I'm really trying to get my work in front of as many people as possible. I'm not saying I want anybody to go steal it, but I'm trying to get my work in front of as many people as possible. But it's always a concern, and you hear the stories, and it's easy enough, you know. I mean, it's easy enough for someone to take a copy and forward an email, and wham, yeah, you know, a million people have it. So it's certainly a concern. But it's kind of the world we live in, right? I mean, there's danger everywhere. So
yeah, what's the process for going? So I've done a trademark before, and that process was highly iterative and filled with pitfalls and forms and. You know, minutia and a lot of it. And it was very interesting. I can only imagine that copywriting your work is probably that to a much worse degree.
Well, I mean, there's a natural copyright that you have. So essentially once you write something and it's yours, you know, that you automatically have copyright protection in that regard. But then you can, you know, go and officially copyright your work, and that, from what I understand, is that it's some forms, but it's not the same as applying for a trademark or applying for a patent or anything like that. It's more of just you're registering it, and it's being officially registered. But I think I think we're pretty close that, you know, once you've written it and it's, you know, it's been published and it's under your name, that you're going to have a lot of protection, at least, you know, theoretical protection, right? I mean, who knows, when someone steals your work, it's really hard to, even if you're copyrighted and trademarked and everything, it's really hard to defend it no matter what. So
yeah,
for sure. It in the music industry all the time, right? We hear these stories about people who are, you know, they take a sample of a song, or they take the melody of a song or things like that, and they have to, and then it turns into a big huge hit song, and then the original writer of the song is got to go sue them and fight them and, you know, argue it out.
So yeah, well, I'm sure that happens. Gets very expensive. And
yeah, no, absolutely. Time. Absolutely. Yeah. It's not a big thing unless there's, you know, I mean, I come from a family of lawyers. So it's like, it's always, I've seen, heard it all a million times. It's like, yeah, we sue these guys. Well, sue who? Sue them for what? You know, what are you going to get? You know, you're going to, you know, they got to, where is there somebody who's going to pay out? You know, so that's always the big question.
And can you actually get damages awarded that would actually at least cover the cost of doing the action? Right. I mean, that's a crazy one.
Well, even if you get a judgment, they could always file bankruptcy or something. And
oh yeah, no, anyway. There's a million stories out there. I knew a lawyer who, he got what was at the time, like the largest award ever for defamation. You know, it was, you know, millions and millions of dollars, but it was against someone who had no means to pay it. So you get this huge award, but then they're, you never collect anything. So
it's just non-enforceable at all.
It's always like, I used to always joke with my brother's a lawyer, and I was just say like, yeah, so what I really need to do is I need to slip and fall, but in Blockbuster Video, like at the time, you know, I guess I need to slip and fall while I'm, you know, in the Apple store. That's where I need to have my, you know, my accident, you know, slipping and falling, you know, outside the local grocery store or whatever, or the local, you know, tanning salon or whatever. It's not the same.
Yeah.
So
interesting. Interesting. So you the LeMaster Files book one, there are three planned. Are we going to be following the same character? And what can you tell us a little bit about the character? Maybe give us a little character definition.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, so it's a three book series so far. I mean, that's what I agreed to. My publisher said to me, oh, we like to sign, you know, five book deals, things like that. And I was just kind of too intimidated to agree to that. the not knowing what I was doing, So it's slated to be a three book series. The second book's completed. I'm working on the third one. And it follows a television reporter. His name is Pete LeMaster. And for Pete, the story starts, The Bystander is the first book. The story starts. Pete is a television reporter. It's a Friday afternoon. He's out filming like a lifestyle piece. There's a football game the next day, and there's the crowds starting to build for, you know, the party the night before. He goes to interview the fans and go, you know, go talk about the football rivalry and stuff like that. And then a guy kind of enters this retail complex with a rifle, and Pete the reporter turns his camera around and turns his camera around, hits record, and dives for cover. And but what happens next is an armed bystander in the crowd comes out, takes out his handgun, and he kills the active shooter. And then the story starts to run from there. The video goes viral, and you know, Pete is now, you know, sitting on a gold mine, and life is looking up, but all is not as it seems, gentlemen. All is not as it seems. And so the rest of the rest of the tale is kind of how the story goes from there.
Awesome, awesome. That sounds like a cool guy. We'll have to meet that Pete guy someday. I wish I had more time. As you said, you know, you get married. I also live on a farm, small farm, but a farm nonetheless. And reading is one of these things that is a luxury of time that I have trouble finding areas to make way for, right?
Sure.
Travel is a good one. I can sit in the metal tube for, you know, a couple few hours, and then I've got, you know, uninterrupted reading time. But outside of that, it's very difficult. And it sounds like an interesting series. I tend to gravitate myself more towards nonfiction, philosophy, history sort of things. But yeah, it definitely sounds right. Like an interesting one. Do you have?
I appreciate that.
Yeah, do you have planned dates for your upcoming books, or are these still tentative?
Yeah, no, actually, there's a couple of things that are happening. So one thing is the publisher sold the audio rights. So all three books are going to be audiobooks. The first, the Bystander audiobook is released in end of April, April 26th or something like that. So for those of you who have trouble finding time to read while you're puttering around and not listening to a podcast, you can listen to an audiobook. And then the second book in the series is called The Pawn, and that comes out on May 13th. Mm. And then I think the third book, which I'm writing right now, I think they're trying to get that out by the end of the year. We'll see. So oh, wow. That's the third book. My publisher's big on the series, and that one, you know, readers will read the first book, will read the second book, you know, try to get them to read the whole series. That's a big part of the kind of the marketing philosophy. And so, you know, I wrote the first book, I finished it, you know, back in 2022. I wrote the second one. I'd kind of started the second one before I got the first one, before I sold the first one. And then finished the second one last March. And so I've been working on the third one and promoting the first one at the same time, doing the big juggling thing. And I got to turn the third one in a couple of months.
So it takes a pretty significant amount of time from the time you're finished, air quotes, with the book before it actually comes out and is published.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's, first thing is the publisher has their own calendar. So I'm not the only writer. Like I'm not the only author. They have my publisher puts out, they put out a book a week, in a title a week, maybe more than that. I'd have to check. Cause they also, the publisher, the lady who started the company, was a romance writer. Mm-hmm. And so They have a lot of romance novels, and then they started a mystery imprint a few years back. So there's like, I would say a couple times a month, a mystery book comes out, and probably once a week, romance novel comes out, stuff like that. So that you're, you know, beholden to that schedule. Right. And then there's just everything that has to happen. You know, your book has to get, you know, you submit a manuscript and then it gets edited and you go back and forth with your editor and they, you know, they give you comments and feedback and, you know, some of it, sometimes you have to agree on things. For the most part, I've been fortunate that they've liked what I've liked my writing and haven't come back and told me to start over. And then there's,
I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, nothing. Yeah. There's no, I've gotten better at it, which is the other part that's good is I think my second book's better than my first one. So, but then, you know, then they have to, obviously it's got to get edited. Then they goes through, what they call, a copy edit, a line edit. Then there's there's proofreaders who go through and check to make sure there's no, you know, stray punctuation and misspellings or things like that. Or, and then everything's properly laid out, clean, consistently. Then they do a cover design. And, you know, so they, you know, they sent me a cover design and I gave them my thoughts on that. And, you know, it takes a few weeks back and forth, you know? And I'm fortunate that they've been open to my suggestions on the cover design. So, all those things have to happen, and then hopefully you do some build up to try to when the release date comes, you kind of hit the ground running when it comes out officially.
I don't know about you, but I would have been sweating bullets with anxiety knowing, you know, signing my name on it. Like, you have to produce this many in this time frame, and
yeah, I mean, it's
affect you at all?
Yeah, I mean a little bit. I mean, so I had the idea for the second book. I was probably a third of the way through, and I knew what it was going to be, and I knew what the hooks were. So I was pretty confident in that. And then I'm working on the third one and I know where it's going. It's just, it's carving out the time. And I've actually asked them for more time and they gave it to me. So, I thought their schedule, what I originally signed on, I was overly ambitious and I didn't know any better. But when I went back to them and said, listen, I just need more time. I can't, you know, I'm trying to promote this book that just came out and now I'm working this other one. I can't serve both of those masters very well right now. And so I think I need some more time. And so that was no problem, thankfully. But it's a bit daunting. It's a bit daunting to have that, you know, deadline looming, but I'm pretty clear on where I got to go for the next book. So that's good news.
Maybe this wasn't, or maybe it was, or I'm not sure. I think it would definitely be challenging for me to see the red line hack slash of an edit of something I wrote come back. Did that like bring up any like old memories of like being in school? Like, you know, all the
markets. Yeah, I mean, there's like, nothing. I mean, well, it, yes and no. So I'll be honest with you. So there's a couple of things. So first thing is I went to journalism school, you know, and so I remember when I had my first journalism classes, I mean, I thought I was hot shit, you know, and I would go in there and they just, you know, I got crucified, you know, my writing right. got destroyed and I was good. Like I was like, I knew what I was doing, you know, compared, you know, there was obviously people who are better at it than I was, but I mean, I knew what I was doing and I was getting crushed. So I've seen plenty of red ink on my writing in my lifetime. You know, for the most part, you know, I'm pretty good with the, you know, the rules and laws of grammar and all that stuff. And I have my own opinions of things and but I also have worked for the past 30 years as a publicist and I have clients and typically, you know, I write things for my clients and they like what I do. But I also know that in the end, you know, if I'm like ghostwriting an article or something, it's their name's on it, not mine. So right. if they don't like something, they get to choose. And so I get, you know, I'm pretty used to being edited. And, you know, the biggest thing is just for me is just, it has to be smart editing. Like it's not edited for the, and that's, then I've been very fortunate. So I haven't gotten edited for the sake of editing. That drives me bananas.
Right.
You know, as a writer, it's like just you, in other words, you're editing it just so that you can say you edited it. If it, you know, I mean, I'm going from the position that it's perfect, right? So now I'll take some suggestions, but you know, you can't go and just decide that I'm going to change, you know, all your that's to witches because you think so, you know?
Okay. So, so question, given your background, Oxford comma, yes or no?
You're not going to like my answer.
You're going
to
say
wanna know
no.
My, you want to try to guess
no.
what my answer is?
He's going
to
say no.
I guess what my answer is? I've officially, I've flip-flopped, and I've flip-flopped basically because it's the sign of the times. And so I grew up as an Oxford comma guy, like probably when I was in high school. And then when I went to journalism school and you start following Associated Press style and they get rid of the Oxford comma. And then now the Oxford comma has found its way back. I think largely due to just the sort of the shift, and then also the Grammarly programs. The Grammarly is the one AI grammar program, and the other AI programs, they've decided they're going to use it. And so I switched back from, I was a non-Oxford comma guy for a long time, and I switched back to the Oxford comma. I think I feel more naturally there, quite honestly. I think it's ultimately clearer, but it's mainly just because due to the sign of the times, I didn't want to have to fight with it, because I knew my clients were going to come back to me and go, well, Grammarly says you should put a comma there, John. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm not going to spend the rest of my life fighting with an AI bot when that seems to be the way things are shifting. So,
yeah.
I have one of my clients is a non-Oxford comma client and organization. And so I don't fight with them over it. I just say, okay, well, then we'll do it your way. You know, as long as it's consistent, that's the biggest thing. Most people get, you know, oh, I'm going to have some fight over, you know, this. And it's like, I'm happy to have the conversation about the Oxford comma or whether like healthcare should be one word or two, you know, but to me is like, make a call and stick with it. And that's the beauty of, in journalism, you know, we have the Associated Press style book, called AP style book. And, you know, I got my first AP style book when I was in probably the seventh grade, you know, and I use it all through college, and I have one on my desk here somewhere. It just gives you guidance on how to do these things. How do you, what do you abbreviate? What don't you abbreviate? And it's not a matter of like, they're right and you're wrong. We're just trying to do it in a consistent way.
Consistent for the readership. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm a big fan of the Oxford comma, especially now, right? I guess I could go back and forth both ways, but now with most communication being written, I think it adds a level. It can remove some questionable nuance, right? This is
okay. Exactly
as intended, as opposed to like that comma being missing. Are you saying the two together combined, or are you separating the ideas?
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
That's my personal take. I grew up using it. I'm stuck in it, and it gives me once in a while. I kind of when I see something without one, but not to the point of it's got to be changed.
Well, written communication can be difficult anyway. I've had text taken the wrong way, like totally not the way I intended them. And people, you know, I think they read into it kind of what they want to read into it. If they think you're angry at them, they take it in an angry way.
Yeah. I think that it's all about
some people just don't like to talk anymore.
Yeah. And the, oh no, believe me. No, listen, younger people, of which I'd say that because I have two, you know, I have a 26-year-old daughter and a 23-year-old son. One of them will pick up the phone in half a second, and the other one will say, well, I hate people, you know, so I doesn't talk to people. So when I was in journalism school, I had the reporting class, which is like the big weed out class in journalism school. We were having this conversation just about commas and clarity. You know, it's like, when do you use a comma, when not to use a comma? There's all kinds of, you know, there's rules. Oxford comma is a rule, right? But then sometimes you just like, okay, let's like, should you be put a comma here for clarity's reason, for to make it more clear? And the professor, I remember him saying specifically, you know, you should use a comma when you think it's like valuable and it makes your sentence more clear, right? But don't go crazy with the commas.
Yeah, right.
So so it's like the answer, no, the answer without an answer.
Yeah.
So it's to me, it's all
matter. How do you feel about the ellipsis? I think I overuse it myself.
Growing on me. It's growing on me. The ellipsis traditionally is not for what people have traditionally used it for. So it's not a, it's traditionally not been a pause. Like the AP style book, it's not a pause. It's basically meant when you're removing something. In other words, when you're saying that, you know, whatever, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, ... you know, and then that kind of thing. In novel writing, it's a known pause. It's a known, you know, I was just going to say, but, you know, in other words, so it's a known pause element. And I've embraced that. I would never use it like in a piece of professional communication, like ever. Like I would never, to me, that's like one of my things. It's like that, semicolons and I, you know, dashes have all of a sudden M dashes have become the norm because of like ChatGTP inserts them all the time.
Yeah, it's more
there's certain things that they get used. Certain things get used, overused, underused, and it goes with the times.
Yeah,
the worst is when they use more than three dots. That's my personal pet peeve, though.
Yeah, those take them out back, shoot them. It's fine, no problem. Yeah, no, there's if people start and there's, but at the same time, I mean, I get political mail with, it's crazy, these letters, and there's like half the stuff's capitalized and everything's underlined and half the stuff's bold or it's not bold. And that's what really, that's the kind of stuff that drives me kind of bananas, because all of a sudden somebody thinks that that's an effective piece of communication. And sadly, people are responding to it, so it is an effective piece of communication. And to me, it just looks like someone who doesn't know how to emphasize,
It's reminiscent of...
That's writing snobbery right there.
Yeah, well, to me...
I'm the snob. In this example, I'm the snob.
To me, it's reminiscent of, if you remember back in the early days and websites were coming up and you had those just horrific websites with the, you know, all caps and bold, and then you got red underline or red highlighted text and, you know, all this stuff on a website. And you're like, you know, that's kind of what I think it's just meant to capture attention and focus your brain on something. I think one of my big pet peeves is ending a sentence with et cetera, etc. and only putting a single period on that.
Yeah, I'm not, that's
stupid.
It's not, no, it's, listen, that's not effective communication. So, I mean, it's okay for a text message, right?
Sure.
I mean, it's okay for an email, or if you're trying to say, you know, these are all the things that Mr. Havoc hates, et cetera, you know, ellipsis, bolds.
There's lots of them. I keep a whole list on my desk here.
Oh, there's a list. Yeah. I had a lady who worked for me who created a file that says that were basically, you know, words and things that John doesn't like she put in there, because she knew that I would come back. There's a lot of words I don't like, because I think they get overused or then people don't know what they mean, and they just, I don't know what they mean. So, you know, I don't know why you'd want to use that such a word in place of this and place of that. So
listen to Dennis Miller talk at some point and you get a real quick. Yeah. It's like, wait, what? Yeah. Well, that's an obscure.
No, No, there's people who are. Yeah, I mean, he's just got an extensive vocabulary.
He does. He's.
But you know, people say utilize instead of use. Like, okay, why? Yeah. Like, do you, is there a reason why you're using? Why you're saying utilize instead of use? Or, you know, I mean, do you really want to facilitate something? Is that really important? Are you really empowering me? Those are like words I just don't.
The corporate buzz speak.
Corporate. Yeah, there's like the corporate speak. That just to me is like, well, what do you mean? Like, what are you really trying to say by that?
Everything must be impactful. I do have one word in the English language that I really do not like, and I live there. Rural.
Oh, rural.
Whoever put that word together, I'm not happy with your choices.
Remember the 30 Rock skit?
Yeah,
great. A rural juror,
right? Yeah,
great. It's awesome.
It's an odd word. I'm not a fan. I don't like it.
I give my wife a hard time about that word sometimes.
Well, all right. Hey, John, thank you so much for coming in here today. Really appreciated you giving us some of your time. Really enjoyed hearing about your book and the authorship process and, you know, publishing and everything else. Let's, you know, give you a little bit of a soapbox to stand on. Tell people, you know, again, where, you know, you're about your books, where they can find you, where they can find your work, where they can purchase your book.
Fantastic. I appreciate the opportunity, guys. I really do. So my debut novel is called The Bystander. It's available everywhere books are sold, as they say. It's not going to be on the shelf at your local Barnes & Noble, but you can order it from your local bookstore. It's available, you know, online, all the online outlets, you know, Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. I'm a big fan of bookshop.org. If you haven't seen bookshop.org, it's an online outlet. You can order a copy of the book, and then a portion of the proceeds go to your local bookshop. You basically identify your local bookshop, and it'll send part of the proceeds directly to your local bookshop. So I'm a big fan of that. So yeah, anywhere you can buy books, you can get mine. And then my website is byjohndavid.com, byjohndavid.com. I'm available on Instagram, also byjohndavid.com. Facebook, same thing. Pretty easy to find. And yeah, my book's called The Bystander. It's book one of the Lemaster Files and from Thule Publishing. And available now, as it is, as they say.
Awesome, awesome. And one thing we like to do with all of our guests is to ask them one thing, which is, you know, throughout our lives, we all are impacted or you know, gifted, touched by someone else's actions, you know, something in our life that made a difference for us, right? It was very impactful. So we like to give our guests a chance to shout out a person, anyone that you would like to just say thank you to.
Well, you know, I dedicated my book to my late mother, you know, I think she would have really gotten a kick out of her son, you know, authoring a novel. But my mother was a teacher, and and she, you know, obviously really believed in education and nurturing. And so my shout out would be to my mom. And the other reason is because my main character in my book, in The Bystander, he has a interesting relationship with his mother. You know, he's got a fun, interesting relationship with his mother. Nothing like my relationship with my mother, but it's sort of a fun kind of comic relief type of aspect of my book. So if I had to give one shout out to one person, it would be my mother, who's my book is dedicated to.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you for joining us for another episode of the Space Tomatoes podcast. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict, Podbean, and Apple Podcast, Amazon, you name it. You know where you can get us. Go grab it. Give us a like if you liked us. Thumbs down if you didn't. Give us a comment. If you have ideas or suggestions for a show, guest, topic, etc., yeah, let us know. We'll be happy to chat with you and see what we can make happen. And remember, wherever you are, whenever you're watching this, have an amazing day.
Thanks for coming by, John. See you, everybody.
Thank you, guys.